Welcome to Texas Style Coworking. The Ranch Office is a neighborhood community office that delivers a warm atmosphere with a heavy dose of Southern hospitality. Located in Memorial, Katy, and Baytown, we offer private offices, conference rooms, event space, and much more. Come change things up and check us out. Remember, life is better at the ranch.
In a global industry where anything can happen, where mistakes cost much more than dollars, we bring you expertise from around the world to ensure that everyone goes home safe every day. The internationally acclaimed Oil and Gas HSE podcast starts now with your host, Russell Stewart.
So today, my guest on the show is Dave Massey. Dave, thanks for coming on today.
Hey, it's a pleasure, Russell.
Thank you for having me. Well, I'm excited to have you. And, of course, the people who listen to the show regularly say, well, Russell, you say that every time. You know, you're excited. Well, of course, I don't get people that I'm not excited about to come on the show. But there are different reasons why I'm excited. I actually met you, or heard of you, I should say, for the first time when I was at the IADC Health, Safety, Environmental, and Training Conference here in Houston. That was 2 or 3 weeks ago at the time of this recording. One of the reasons I was particularly interested in that conference is because on two different days, they had special segments for, I call it human performance, but now it's just about universally. Now it's not HP anymore. Now it's HOP. So it's human organizational performance. And you were actually the chair of session on day one. And then on day two, they had another segment, and you were involved in a panel discussion on that. And that's when I was introduced to you and introduced to Reach. And then I looked up the website. So you're the CEO and founder of Reach Group. Did I forget to say that? I probably did.
That's great.
Well, I looked up Reach Group on your website, and I mean, I was just really impressed as to who you guys are and what y'all do. So tell the audience, who is Reach Group and what do you do and all that? Give us some history.
Thank you, Russell, for the introduction. Reach was founded on the idea that people need a little bit of help. And we're founded in the year 2000 here in Houston. We've worked with over 180 different client organizations in something like 52 countries. We're largely upstream oil and gas, drilling completions, interventions, and production onshore and offshore. Right now, it's probably more 75% offshore than 25% onshore. The dynamics have changed a little bit since the downturn. But anything to do with performance in upstream oil and gas, it's culture, leadership, development, supervisory skill development, operational performance, all those kind of things.
This was 24 years ago. You came to Houston. You're not from Houston.
I'm not originally from Oklahoma City. I started out working for Conoco, and then I went to Costa Rica, and I had an aloe vera farm. And
you had a what?
An aloe vera farm and processing plant in Costa Rica. That was a lot of fun, and I did that in the late 80s and early 90s until I went back to the University of Oklahoma for my MBA.
And you got your MBA, and then from there, you came to Houston to start this company?
I became a offshore performance coach, really operational improvement coach for BP in the North Sea and Venezuela, back again in the North Sea. And then,
so that would have been in the late 70s.
I started as a coach in 1996.
96.
96. And then in 2000.
Oh, yeah. My math is off. Yeah.
There were a couple of gentlemen that were doing the same work, and together we formed the Reach Group. I approached them with the idea and started from that. We really hit a need in the marketplace. Today, the things that we were doing then are pretty much standard and commonplace across most of the operators and now even drilling contractors. And
we'll see, because I didn't realize, and maybe I'm the dummy here, or maybe the rest of my audience isn't, but that was like back in 96, that was like cutting edge doing that kind of stuff, wasn't it?
Well, it was. I don't know of really anybody else that was doing that.
No, I don't either. So you kind of brought this to the marketplace almost, or at least because BP would have been kind of unique or whatever. So you brought this to the...
It mushroomed pretty quick. In 2000, it became very popular. There were some companies that were doing certain elements of that themselves, but finding an outside facilitator was very helpful in safely reducing well construction times, whether it be drilling completions. And then that very quickly segued into leadership and supervisory skill development, because that enhanced what we were trying to do with different organizations. And then it segued into the world of safety.
You used the word, you were a performance company, or
yes,
performance coaches.
Yes.
And then, of course, that leads into you need leaders for that sort of thing. And now you say safety. The performance coaching, that was how to drill a well better or how to do things better? Or
it's really more about engaging the people to get things right the first time.
Oh, I see. Okay. If you don't have time to do it right the first time, when are you going to have time to do it over again, right?
That's right, because doing it a second time tends to be much more costly. And it's not fun being part of a team where you're always having to go back and redo work. It puts stress on individual relationships. It puts stress on the team, and those things can have a cumulative effect, that all of which are negative. So by doing the right thing the first time, you iron out a lot of the problems, and performance just is an outcome of that, whether it's operational performance, productivity, or safety performance as well. It all gets down to the same basics about engaging people, getting them to own their own culture, be accountable for their own outcomes, which is really ownership. It's not like, hey, you said you're going to do this. And a lot of people use accountability as a finger wagging exercise. And that's why, hey, I don't want to be accountable because someone's going to wag their finger. No, accountability is really about taking ownership proactively to do the right thing the right way at the right time and seeking support when you need it.
And in the HSE world, thankfully, that's kind of where it's evolved over time from, we use this term on this show all the time, the traffic cop mentality, you know, going to hide in the bushes and see what I can catch you doing wrong or whatever.
Well,
that's
a great point, because if you go back in time to the 90s and the 2000s, what we would see in the field a lot were a lot of the, what we would call safety cops, you'd call them a traffic cop. And yeah, it's like, ha-ha, I caught you not using your procedure. Ha-ha, I caught you
not wearing your PPE. Yeah.
And that's not really helpful. In fact, that is exactly the opposite of what you want to do. You want to, as a safety coach or a performance coach, you want to build a relationship. You want to build trust. And the most important skill there by far is listening to people. If you don't listen to someone, first of all, you haven't earned the right to be their coach. But secondly, you don't know what to coach if you're not listening to them. It's now a common saying, you know, no one gets up in the morning and think, today's the day we're going to go and mess things up. Today's the day I'm going to go have an,
we don't get hurt. Yeah.
People want to do a good job. The thing is, as executives, managers, supervisors, we need to give them the environment to perform safely. So we need to develop them, which again gets back to listening to people about what their needs are.
In order for this to be successful, then that really is where it has to go to. It has to go to the executives and the managers, and you have to deal with some of their misconceptions and some of the mistakes they're making, right?
There's always a triangle of the organization, the people, and the process. And the executives need to make sure that they have done everything they can to have the right series of procedures and processes and tools in place. Usually it's handled by the managers. And today, I think the industry does an exceptionally good job of that. You really have to go back at least 15, 20 years to see pieces missing. Where the attention needs to be today is in the organization and in the culture, setting the right culture that is psychologically safe for the employee to feel that they can learn, they can challenge, they can stop the job without any fear of reprisal or negative repercussions. Then that way you are building an organization that at the front line is taking that accountability, taking that ownership for performance, whether operationally or safety. And you're just always going to get a better result. The third part then of that triad is the people. And as an executive, you need to make the funds available so that the managers can decide on the most effective training that that team needs. And it's different from team to team, but there are all kinds of supervisory skills. And less so today, but it's still very true that a lot of people get promoted because they're really good mechanically, or they've been there the longest, or they're my brother-in-law.
The old Peter principle to some extent, yeah.
What we need to do is fine to promote that person, but you got to give them the skills so that they can be successful as a supervisor. There's very few schools where you can go and pick up those skills. So one of the things that Reach does is use a series of supervisory skill modules to develop those people to be very effective in supervising and managing crews, as well as a $100,000 or $400,000 a day operation at the end of the day. Yeah. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
So have we made sure that we've given them the skills to successfully manage a business of that size?
Okay, so how do you do that, this training? Y'all bring them into Houston and put them in a class, or do you go onto the rig and do it? Is it online? How you do this?
We've done all three of those. And so The answer is it depends. In the past, what we like to do would be to bring people into a class, and that might be 1, 2, 3, even 5 days of training. But that's a lot of training. You're putting a lot of content into people's minds. There's going to be a lot of spillage. The important part is coaching the skills afterwards. So I've used human factors or human performance concepts of knowledge and application of that knowledge. So you have to have the knowledge, which is the content. But if you don't apply the knowledge, then it still doesn't do you any good. And so the application comes either from having a professional coach who is working with you in a risk assessment toolbox talk, a weekly safety meeting, all these different things about how effective you are at engaging people, how effective you are at covering the points. And then by giving that feedback live or in near live time, they ingrain that skill. It becomes something natural over the course of a number of months. So typically, going back to your question, when do we do that? How do we do that? Yes, it can be done in class. Yes, it can be done online. But what we typically do now is during the course of a performance implementation, whether it's culture by design or human performance, whatever it might be, is give a series of these supervisory skill modules. I think we have something like 47 on all these different topics. And you're not going to give them all 47, but let's say you pick 12 over the course of time. These are typically 90 minutes in duration, so they might be broken up into 2 45-minute sections, 2 consecutive days. And then immediately we're applying those in the activities of the next day. So the coach is going to look for that supervisor and say, okay, tell me about the interactions that you had with people. What were the different concepts that you applied? How did it work? What felt comfortable? What didn't? And by having someone to talk to about that and improving your application of that knowledge, application of that skill, you get really good really quickly. And our target and what our clients are looking for is sustainability. How quickly can we get to where the supervisors have competency across all of these key skills and that the process itself within the organization is, in fact, sustainable for the long term? And then the coaches can disengage.
And how do you measure that? How do you know when you got there?
That's a great question.
And that's what I'm here for.
You're doing a
great
job.
That's the
only
reason they need me.
People in HSE debate a lot about lagging and leading indicators. And we all know that lagging indicators are not particularly helpful because it's already happened. Nonetheless, we still need to have those leading indicators, those inputs. We can spend a lot of time focused on how many stop cards I write or how many interventions I make or whatever. But at the end of the day, what's really important is the quality of the supervisory's interface with crew. My favorite measurement is to go to the rig and use my eyes and my ears, and I will see the difference. Very quickly, when you go to a rig, you can tell just by housekeeping,
by the way that people are interfacing. Right.
Are they hiding from their supervisors, or are they coming up, and how do they interface in a toolbox talk? Are people freely asking questions, or is it just, okay, A, B, C, D, any questions? No, great, let's go. You know, and everyone nods their head, and then we go, and something happens.
Yeah, all you did was check the box in that meeting.
Exactly. Really, for me, the only measurement that counts are my own eyeballs and ears. If I can't make it to the rig, what I need to do is have a quality conversation with the 2 or 3 leaders from the rig, and I need to ask them some pointed questions about, you know, tell me the things that you learned in the last 24 hours. Tell me what the things are that you're going to be planning for over the next 24 hours and how you're preparing for them. Asking them questions like that about what they're doing differently that is based around quality instead of checking the box, as you said. We need procedures, but the important thing is breathing life into the procedure. There's a lot of difference you can see from Rig A and Rig B about how they use the very same procedure. And then the outcomes can be dramatically different because, one, they're just going through the motions because somebody told me I have to read this procedure and, oh, how painful this is. Okay, everyone, any questions? And everyone shakes their head and then they all go. But you can see very clearly that that team is not acting as a team. They're not coordinated. They're not going to go out there and win the Super Bowl. We're another team where they're saying the best time that we did before looked like this, and this is what we did, and Charlie did that. And Eddie did that. And they're talking about the very specifics about what needs to be done. And remember, there's a risk of this. There's a hazard of that. We need to control this at this point in time. And they get into those details and everyone is chiming in. You know that they've got it handled. Those are the day and night differences. I use my eyes and my ears to measure. Again, if I can't go to the rig, I can get enough of a taste by asking the right questions to the leadership. In turn, I have to set my expectations. One of the things that we talk about at Reach is an event. Now, that's not an event like an incident investigation. An event for us is anytime two or more people are getting together and they're either planning or they're communicating that plan. And what I want to do before that event, and that could be a toolbox talk, it could be the weekly safety meeting, it could be pre-tower, it could be a risk assessment. But in advance of that, I want to take a few moments and think about the impact, the influence, and the legacy that I'm going to have in that event. My impact is my entrance, my first words, the tone that I'm setting. How do I want to come across? The influence is, what was I able to achieve in terms of educating or setting up mitigation? What was the action that I was able to achieve during that interface? And the legacy is what I left them with once I'm gone. What will they remember? So I walk out the door. We had those 3 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever it was together. At the end of the day, what are those people thinking once I've left? You know, we always talk about, I can't be everywhere. I can't watch them all the time. And that's where you rely upon each individual to keep themselves safe and the crew around them safe. But in order for that to happen, I've got to set up that environment and that expectation of them for that to happen. Again, going to the rig and seeing that in action, that's what I want to see. So I'm looking for the presence of that or the absence of that. And if I have the absence of that, then that's where I, as that manager, whether I'm the HSE manager or the operational manager, and what are the things that I need to do to adjust my game? Because this culture is a reflection of me, whatever I got out there. If I'm happy with it, good on me, I've done the right things. But if it's not the culture that I'm interested in, if it's not the culture that I envision, that's a reflection on me as well. And I need to figure out how I need to change my game plan to influence people to get that culture where I am. And of course, engaging everyone as much as, well, why are we doing this instead of this way? And they'll give you some answers. They'll give you some really good answers.
That's interesting. So whereas an ineffective, let's say HSE manager or whatever, the guy who's, you know, the supervisor or whatever, rather than the onus being on everyone out there, you know, to follow the proper procedures, right, and stay safe. And if he sees that's not happening, he probably needs to take a look at.
Oh, absolutely. That's part him. It's part the OIM or rig manager. It's part the organization. You need to get a look at people and process and the organization. All three of those people pieces need to be in place. But we're talking about the people. So if the people aren't doing the right thing, the organization's not setting them up for success, or I'm not doing my part in ensuring that they know what my expectation is, that they have the right budget, tools, processes in place, those kind of things. They typically will have the right procedures and processes in place. What they may not have in place is knowledge of how to use them effectively.
That's where you come in.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
We focus a lot on that.
All right. You've been a performance coach in oil and gas for nearly 30 years now. What have you learned along the way? What pearls of wisdom can you pass on to us?
Number one is listen to people. Ask people the right questions, and they'll give you the answers about what we need to do differently or what they need. If you take care of them instead of worrying about yourself, then you've got something to work with and something to improve. So many people have such an ego that they make it about themselves. That doesn't happen on my watch, and they brought me in here to make sure no one gets hurt. Well, hey, dude, you're just one person, and you're not the one lifting and carrying and moving stuff. It's those people. So,
you know, I got to interrupt you right here because you said two things that I think are just extremely important. When you talked about the listening aspect, and a lot of times you'll hear, well, they won't listen to me. Okay, but you hit the nail on the head right there. And folks, the next two things we're about to say here is worth your price of admission today. You talked about asking questions. Even if you need to be accusatory, and there's times when, you know, you do have to sometimes stick your finger in somebody's face maybe, but instead of making what I call judgmental statements, if you can just turn that around into a question.
Yeah.
That's critical. And the second thing, and this reason I interrupt you, because I want you to talk about this a little bit more. You know, there's an old saying about you can always tell an egotist, but you can't tell him much.
I hadn't heard that. That's good.
How do you deal with that guy?
People are who they are, and they're going to be who they're going to be. I think with someone who has that big ego, you have to work with them the same way that you do with everybody else. And that is setting expectations for how the organization needs to create that psychologically safe environment, setting the goals, and then asking them the right question. What are you doing to support your team? And so what are you doing to lead your team? What are you doing to support your team?
That's actually a good point to use the saying, ask questions.
Yeah.
We may entitle this podcast, Ask Questions. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you've got to get them that ego character, the big ego character. You've got to get them to start focusing on other people and understanding that if they're successful, you'll be successful. But if they're not successful, you can't be successful. Stop worrying about you and don't be claiming things, because it's the team that gets things done, not you. Now, if the team does things the right way, then you succeeded in your role as that supervisor, because you created that environment for people to perform, for people to learn, to develop. Those are the things that we're really looking for. We all start out knowing next to nothing in our careers, and you can't just run somebody off because the next person, you'll be starting over from scratch.
Exactly. What you haven't gotten anywhere. That's not the, in a lot of times, I can't remember if it was your presentation. It may have been yours. I heard so many of them, they're all starting to run together, but somebody talked about that the solution to the problem is, you know, you're going to run somebody off. And then you're going to bring somebody else in.
And you start from scratch.
It's kind of like, yeah, exactly.
There are some people that don't belong.
Right, exactly.
Well, there are some people.
Exactly.
And you can figure those people out pretty quickly, and you may be doing them a favor by moving them on. But most of us can cut it. The thing is, they need the support, the guidance. There's a balance between giving them direction and support where, depending on, I'm not talking about situational leadership. It's not the person, it's the particular skill or tasks that we're talking about. Are they a beginner, or are they still learning, or are they now doing the job? Are they fully competent? And therefore, my approach is different. I have to adjust my approach to where that person is, that skill set or that task. But as soon as we're done with that, even talking with the same person and we're talking about a different task, their development level may be very different. And I have to adjust myself again, depending on, because if they're brand new at it, then I need to be very direct. This is what a good job looks like. I want you to go over there and observe how Bobby does it. And the outcome needs to be within this particular box, and it needs to be done by such and such. Let's talk about it. Once you're halfway, be very directive. But if the person is very competent, then you're delegating a lot more. You're just being supportive. You still have to follow up and find out. So setting the clear expectations is the first part of the model. Providing direction and support is the second part. And the third part is the feedback and follow-up. And if they're doing a great job, let them know about it. We're so good at telling people when they messed up, but very rarely do we stop and say, that was a good job because you did it on time. You did it under budget. You went above the quality standard. Whatever it was, let them know. And as much as possible, at least in most cultures, in front of peers, because then the peers learn, oh, that's a good job. You know, Johnny got praised because he did such and such. I'm going to try and do that like Johnny so I get praised. That's really important. And then, of course, reprimands or improvement opportunities. A lot of times those are best done privately.
So. Right, right. Yeah, exactly. 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 That's exactly right. There's only one of you. You can't be these coaches that you send out there.
Right.
These are Reach employees. These are your own guys or third-party people? Or
no, they're all Reach employees, and we're in so many countries. Some of them are consultants, but they're long-term. We have had a lot of people on staff 15, 20 years.
Oh, really?
Yes. So there are others that have been around recently, but it's a mix of long-term and short-term. But we very much try to keep people because we spend a lot of time recruiting to make sure that we get the right person. And then there's a lot of time training and developing them, particularly on the development side, to get them to be a world-class quality. You can call yourself a coach, but that doesn't mean that you're an effective coach, just like anything else. You have to have the right personality. And I think that's one of the things that people miss is, you know, what is the right personality for a coach? And a coach at least a performance coach. I'm not talking about
right,
a football
right.
coach.
You sure.
know,
yeah.
Andy Reid would maybe not fit my qualifications as a coach, but he sure is a darn good football coach. One of the things is it's not about me. You don't want someone with a big ego. You want someone that puts the limelight on the team. I want them to win. They understand that by the team winning, they win. And that's the only way that they win. And that's my recognition is when the team succeeds. And I feel good because I can see the development of people over the course of 6-12 months. The other thing is listening skills. And you can say I'm a good listener, but ask your spouse. You'll find out really quickly whether or not you're a good listener. There's a real skill to listening, not just hearing what people say. Listening means as well as what are the things they said and didn't say? What are the things that they could be indicating? And then asking, are you trying to say this or do you mean that? Those kind of clarifications. Then thinking about where they're coming from and where they need to be. And then what is it that you can say in terms of feedback to help them close that gap? So those listening skills, those analytical skills are really important. They don't have to have a whole lot of downhole knowledge because they don't have to be engineers. They're not in the well construction. They're on the people part and the process part, really the people using the process effectively.
Well, that's all very interesting. I can't believe our conversation has already gone past the half hour mark.
Well, we're just starting.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, we may have to do this again, but I really appreciate you coming on and imparting your knowledge to our audience. And I appreciate it. And I know our audience appreciates it. And we'll put your LinkedIn contact info in the show notes. We'll put Reach Group's website in the show notes. And folks, you need a performance coach. Check out Reach. You guys are in how many countries now?
Oh, at any time, we're in usually about 12, 15 countries, but we've worked in 52. We work in about 8 different languages.
So no pun intended, but they have quite a reach. And we'll leave it with that. As always, thanks to everyone out there for listening. And please post us on LinkedIn, leave reviews on all your social media, tell your friends to listen to us. When you give us reviews, of course, that always helps us, and we're always happy to hear even some of your constructive criticisms and suggestions and maybe guests you want to have on the show. We're always looking for guests like Dave to come on the show, so you can reach out to me on LinkedIn, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Russell.
Thank you.
Tune in next week for another engaging episode of the Oil & Gas HSE Podcast, a production of the Oil & Gas Global Network. Learn more at oggn.com.